Welcome back to the program. I am pleased to welcome back Lester Brown to EcoTalk. He is founder and president of the Earth Policy Institute. He has been described by the Washington Post as one of the world's most influential thinkers. He's also the author of several books, including most recently Plan B 2.0. And he's here to talk about this article in Time Magazine. It is a cover article, arrived at my home this weekend. I was thrilled to see it's all about global warming, how to adapt to it, but kind of surprised to see ethanol listed as one of the key solutions. And in fact, Lester Brown has some strong opinions about that. So that's what we're going to talk about. And welcome to EcoTalk. It's been a couple months since we spoke to you last. And since then, Sports Illustrated, a big mainstream magazine, has run global warming on the cover of their issue. And now Time Magazine again. They did that about a year ago. It was global warming, why we should be worried, very worried. And now they're revisiting it. I guess it probably has something to do with April being, you know, considered Earth Month. So what do you think of this article?
Well, the idea that Time Magazine would devote as many pages as it has to sort of what to do about global warming. I haven't counted the pages, but it's a big section of this fat edition of the magazine.
It's about, 15 to 20 pages, so they do more than give, usually they just give a sentence or two. They actually do a couple of sentences to a couple of paragraphs on each of the 51 things that each of us can do.
This is another manifestation of a rising sense of public interest and concern in environmental issues, and specifically in climate change. It's interesting how sort of rapidly this issue is escalating, and the ruling of the Supreme Court is yet another indication, I think, of where things are headed.
Yes, it's slow in coming, but the arrival has been hasty, and I guess that's a good thing given the lateness of the date.
Yeah, I was thinking, a year or so ago, if we had been talking and I had said, I know this guy who does a PowerPoint presentation on climate change with lots of graphs and charts and data and wants to make it into a movie, which he thinks is going to be a box office success, you would have wondered.
Well, in fact, Al Gore wondered when the producers came to him and said they wanted to do it. He didn't think it would work, and he knew how compelling his content was.
Exactly.
Best use of Hollywood talent I've ever seen.
Yeah. As I've traveled around the world, I find people almost everywhere, who have seen the movie and some have been very much affected by it.
It is really happening at a much more rapid, pace than anyone, even the scientists, could have predicted. On 60 Minutes Sunday night, just a segment about what's happening to the penguins, how their population is shrinking rapidly. Very alarming news. But we're going to talk about ethanol, because I wondered if you cringed when you saw that leading the list of things that will make a big difference.
Yeah, I was surprised. And I wonder if the selection of it as the number one means that maybe they haven't been tracking the issue quite as closely as some people have. What we're beginning to see is a realization that ethanol is not the answer. Despite the ethanol euphoria that one sees here and feels here in Washington, what we're now beginning to see much more clearly, since the price of corn has doubled over the last year or so, wheat futures are trading at 10-year highs, rice prices are climbing, soybean prices are up by half. What we're beginning to realize is that this enormous shift of resources into the production of fuel for cars in the United States is affecting world grain markets and world food prices. We've seen a nearby demonstration of this when hundreds of thousands of Mexicans took to the streets protesting the 60% or so rise in tortilla prices. Mexico's diet is a corn-based diet, and when the price of corn took off, so did their food staple prices. And for many Mexicans, this is a really difficult increase. And my sort of major concern is that in our sort of desire to reduce our dependence on oil, and reduce our oil insecurity, we're going to create global food insecurity on a scale that I don't think most people have imagined.
Last week, the New York Times published an article saying that the U.S. would be planting more corn this year than at any time since 1944. What's the real problem of planting more, let alone how you actually use it, fuel versus food?
Right. For one thing, a lot of that increase in corn acreage is going to come at the expense of soybeans. And the response to that is that the Brazilians will clear more rainforests to grow soybeans. So that's one of the indirect spin-offs of this ethanol euphoria that's kind of taken over the capital. The other big thing to keep in mind is that it's going to take an enormous increase in grain production this year to avoid further declines in stocks and even more dramatic rises in prices. Last year, worldwide, we had a 75 million ton shortfall in the grain harvest. That is, last year, for the sixth time in 7 years, world grain consumption exceeded production. And that can happen only if you draw down stocks. The result is that right now, the carryover stocks of grain in the world are at the lowest level in 34 years. Mm-hmm. In addition to that 75 million ton shortfall that we need to make up, because we're now down just about to pipeline stocks, there's going to be an increase in this country of roughly 25 million tons of grain going to ethanol distilleries. And worldwide, we need another 20 million tons of grain just to cover the food and feed needs of an additional 70 million people that we're adding each year. When you add those numbers up, it comes to about 120 million tons of additional grain needed this year. Just to maintain the status quo. It doesn't allow anything for rebuilding stocks. And that will require worldwide a 6% jump in the grain harvest. And that's possible, but it's not something we can count on.
You know, the case is getting stronger among environmental experts that ethanol is not the panacea. Is there a danger of, you know, as far as the public perception of ethanol being touted as a solution, then all of a sudden, well, it's not perfect, and then what about, you know, don't let the perfect be the enemy of the good, that whole thing? Are you concerned at all about how, just as the American public is starting to get excited about ethanol, many in the know realize that, gee, it takes more energy to produce it than it will yield?
Yeah, it's with corn in the United States, the net energy yield is really quite low. There's not much of a gain there to begin with. The other thing is that it's not just rising world food prices that we're concerned about in this sort of emerging epic competition between 800 million people who own cars and want to maintain their mobility and the 2 billion poorest people in the world. We're simply trying to get enough food to survive. In this competition, it's clear who's going to win, because the average income of automobile owners in the world is around $30,000 a year, whereas the average income of the 2 billion poorest people is less than $3,000 a year. Mm. But the thing we have to keep in mind is that this is going to translate, has the potential for translating into enormous political instability, because most low and middle-income countries are grain importers, and as the price of grain goes up, the low-income people in the cities will be trapped, and they will take to the streets because they expect their governments to provide a certain amount of food security and food price stability. That political unrest could disrupt global economic progress, and then it begins to affect all of us. It's not just the food price index; it's the Nikkei index and the Dow Jones Industrial 500 and so forth that is affected by the political instability translating into economic disruption.
Well, I mean, is it okay, though, to offer alternative fuels as part of the solution? I know Vinod Khosla, venture capitalist, poured a lot of money into Prop 87, is a big proponent of ethanol, as you know. You know, he says it's an important way station on the way to better fuels like celluloid, other biomass sources. Is that a red herring, or is that accurate? And how do we address both, you know, the concerns among, you know, some in the environmental community, many, growing number, and those who would say that ethanol is the answer?
Vinod and I have talked about this quite a bit, and I mean, if I were investing hundreds of millions of dollars in ethanol distilleries based on corn, I would probably make the same argument. But the thing to keep in mind is that if you say this is just a way station to cellulosic ethanol, which will not compete directly with food consumption. The problem is we're not there yet, and we're not close to being there yet. And meanwhile, we keep building more and more corn-based ethanol distilleries. Mm-hmm. And we're not talking about a problem here that's emerging, you know, 5 or 10 years down the road. We're talking about corn prices that have already doubled, about wheat prices trading at the highest level in a decade. Mm-hmm. So these are problems already here and becoming very clear. The demonstrations, the street demonstrations in Mexico about the rising price of corn and tortillas are very real. And what we could be looking at before long is not just Mexicans crossing the border in search of jobs, but Mexicans.
And that's not a new phenomenon.
Right, Mexicans crossing the border in search of food.
Well,
so we're looking at a situation that could sort of blow up in our faces, not 5 or 10 or 20 years from now, but within the next year or two.
Well, we're looking at a spot break. I'm afraid we have to conclude our conversation with Lester Brown now. Thank you so much, as always, for your insightful comments and keeping us honest as to what is already here, what our current challenges are, and if only it wasn't so complicated, but at least we want to bring all the different aspects of these issues to you, our listeners. We'll be back right after these messages, and Lester Brown, thanks again.
Thank you, Betsy.